Last Word on Today FM.
Listen, let's start with picks of the week before we get into the conversation about the likes of Clive Davis. John, give us your pick of the week, please.
Well, finally, Pulp are officially releasing a live album. It's taken from their 2025 tour. It's not out till next month, but they have released the version of Disco 2000 from it. It's not, I suppose they did do a live album and the deluxe edition of This Is Hardcore in 1998 called This Is Glastonbury, which was their set from that year. But this is the first All Bells and Whistles Pulp live album. And listen to the, you know how we love a bit of crowd participation, Matt, don't you?
I do.
I believe I once made you a playlist of songs with great crowd participation in them, which you has probably left unlistened to. But anyway, here's Disco 2000 and you can hear the crowd, all of the crowd singing it along with Jarvis. Common People is the iconic one, but that could be their greatest song, with Not a Little Debt to Gloria by Laura Branigan.
Gloria by Laura Branigan, yes.
I love that song.
Yeah. I think they probably garnered inspiration from that song. But anyway, it's a brilliant, brilliant tune. And the album called Live! Is out on the 28th of August.
Okay. What's your pick of the week, G, please?
Something completely different. It is from the Cork-based indie folk group Briars. They've released their latest single. It's called Riv, or O-I-M-H. So they're a six-piece band, and they do really good live performances, but their sound is quite unusual. It kind of combines folk, indie, pop, rock, and then Irish trad music as well. And this is a continuation of the same.
There will be a time when you look back to think on days you were taken aback. But it's not to silence our error on. The shade is as important as the sun. So don't rely on only one. But all of this just grieves you at your chance. You wasted what was needed to advance. Depending on your hand-me-downs, the hardest days that I put down are gone. We were waiting on and on, but it's not really said anymore. They leave me dead before all the darkness will glow.
That's really good, Dee. And I'd imagine they're very good live.
Oh, they're fantastic live. And Riv, of course, means before in Irish. So it's kind of it's actually really nice to see more and more bands not just embracing Irish within their songs, but actually being bold enough and brave enough, I think, to put something out to the international market that has a title that would be hard for other English speaking nations to, I guess, understand.
Now, tell us a little bit as well. Kingfisher have announced, having recently had about 20,000 people at St. Anne's Park, clearly Kingfisher are on the up because they've already announced three summer shows for next year. Tell us about those, Dee.
Yeah, so shows for Dublin, Belfast and Limerick. I mean, they're just having an amazing time of it of late. So they're going to play their home city in Limerick at Thomond Park on July 11th. And then they'll be at the Bell Sonic Festival in Belfast on July 11th. And
actually, Thomond Park is July 10th.
July 10th, yeah. I was thinking it must be. They're good, but they're not by location.
Yeah.
Marley Park in July in Dublin on the 19th. But Dee, what I thought was very interesting as well, They're selling the tickets on their own website. Are they avoiding going through Ticketmaster?
Yeah, it's hard to know, Matt. And of course, tickets.ie, closed down recently. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. That they are actually taking the option of selling them themselves directly. I've no idea, though, whether that is to do with not wanting to work with Ticketmaster.
I don't think they'd have the choice if they're playing Belsonic. I think they'll have to use Ticketmaster, certainly if they're playing Belsonic.
Does this give perhaps first opportunity
possibly,
to get the tickets? You can get them on the band's own website.
Quite possibly. I'm sure they'll give us more details before Friday.
Okay.
It might be a way of controlling the different tiers of tickets as well.
Okay, let's talk for a little while about somebody aged 94, but who had an extraordinary career in music over a number of generations as well. Like an absolutely fascinating piece in the New York Times today about the career of Clive Davis, John. Mm. And also about, it gave 11 essential songs that he had, well, as they described it, shepherded it. Mm. So tell us a bit about Clive Davis.
Clive Davis was one of the great record men. And we know this because he kept telling us. He's, I suppose...
Don't be begrudging now. Don't be begrudging.
Look, you know, Clive Davis is dead, and what you're going to get is all of the New York Times and the Times in London and the Observer saying what a brilliant record executive and producer he was. I have never loved Clive Davis because I think he had a tendency to take all of the credit for an artist's success for himself. He also meddled constantly in artists' careers, thought he knew better than the artists, and thought that all of their success was purely down to him. Clive wanted to be known as the greatest record man that ever was, and Clive was never wrong. Now, unfortunately, Clive also signed Barry Manilow and Kenny G. He also threw Milli Vanilli, the two guys from Milli Vanilli, to the wolves when it came out that they weren't allowed to sing on their own album. Clive said that he wasn't aware of any of this and that the producer had hoodwinked him as well. Although he wasn't shy for taking credit for all these artists' success, he did, and this is a particular bone of contention with me. I think Rob and Fab from Milli Vanilli were absolutely shafted and so hard done by.
Okay, let me give you examples though of the stuff I've been reading about him today. Yeah. For example, you know, knowing what song people wanted, what's the best known Simon and Garfunkel song?
Probably The Boxer.
I would have said it's Bridge Over Troubled Water, and you deliberately said that to be perverse.
Sound of Silence.
Come on, John.
Sound of Silence.
The best known. I'm not going to ask you for the best.
I would think probably The Sound of Silence.
I would say Bridge Over Troubled Water, which he chose to be their first single from the 1970 album. They didn't want it, but he said, this is the one, this is a home run.
Yeah.
And he was right. Yeah. He had to think that. Okay, he's founded Arista Records in 1974, and he signed the likes of Aretha Franklin, Dionne Warwick, Patti Smith, The Grateful Dead, Alicia Keys, and Whitney Houston. He had an incredible range here, didn't he, Dee?
Yeah, he also took kind of CBS Records out of just doing, you know, cast Broadway musicals and more kind of traditional stuff into the rock and roll era that it did really, really well for. I think it's interesting to me, actually, that he started.
That's funny. I thought Columbia had Bob Dylan in the early 60s, signed by John Hammond. But okay.
Well, but he was one of the people that pushed for them to more seriously pursue rock musicians. But he came, like, similar to Walter Yetnikoff, he started off as a lawyer for the things. And I think that kind of, you know, he started as a lawyer coming from a poor background, and he managed to get into a creative industry where I suppose he was allowed to stretch his wings creatively. And I think, yeah, look, he probably was a very, very difficult man to be around if you were on the wrong side of him, for sure.
Well, Yetnikoff was, and we I think we've both read his book, Dee, haven't we?
Well, we have, indeed,
yeah.
Yeah, but what I think is interesting about him is he did, as Matt says, steward some of the most incredible music of the late 20th century. And he had really good relationships with some of the artists that he worked with.
Indeed, Bruce Springsteen has spoken very mm-hmm. fondly of him. In fact, that there were 11 essential songs, as the New York Times says, shepherded by Clive Davis. One of them was from Springsteen, Blinded mm-hmm. by the Light. But let's hear a little bit of Whitney Houston, Saving All My Love for You.
Because tonight is the night for feeling all right. We'll be making love the whole night through. So I'm saving all my love. Yes, I'm saving all my love. Yes, I'm saving all my love for you.
Cheesy, but good, John.
Brilliant. But, like, how could you fail with that voice? You know, like, anybody could have signed.
Well, plenty of people do fail with that voice, actually. There's more to the music industry than just talent. And he was someone who was incredibly good at knowing how to take the raw talent and turn it into a hugely profitable career for both himself and the artist.
Well, let me give you some of the other essential songs. Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes. If You Don't Know Me By Now, that's a Stonewall classic.
Yeah,
that is an absolute. As I mentioned, Springsteen, Blinded by the Light. Mm. Okay, you'll hate this one, John Gimmer said. Barry Manilow's Mandy.
That's a good tune. It is a good tune. But like Manilow didn't want to record it and he was forced to record it.
And wasn't he lucky that he was forced to record it?
Yeah, but
Dionne Warwick, I'll Never Love This Way Again. That's another.
Could you hum it? I couldn't.
It's not a hummable song. Anita Franklin, The Freeway of Love.
Terrible. Aretha was at her best in the late 60s, and everybody knows it. Freeway of Love is an 80s, it's just steeped in 80s production, and it's dreadful.
If you're at a wedding, you'd be dancing along.
I wouldn't. They wouldn't play it because it's not popular.
Okay, well, they do have Kenny G's Songbird. All right, I'll get it.
He is to blame we'll leave that for out. Kenny G.
Millie Vanilli's Blame It on the Rain.
Again, great tune, regardless of the surrounds, an absolutely banging tune.
Carlos Santana featuring Rob Thomas.
Awful
and Smooth.
Coffee shop.
I'm actually not sure I know that one.
You do know it.
You do. It was on the radio constantly in 1999.
Yeah.
Okay.
Coffee shop music.
All right. Alicia Keys and Fallen.
Overrated.
Classic.
Overrated versus classic. I love it. Okay. Yeah. And Rod Stewart, These Foolish Things. He is credited with saving Rod Stewart's career.
He ruined Rod Stewart's career with this great American songbook frolic. Utter nonsense. Rod went off the
rails. I
don't
think you could say that Rod Stewart's career has been ruined by anyone.
Well, he certainly took him down a bloody dead end that, no. Rod had one of the great rock voices and he ruined him.
At an age where he needed to mature the voice into other areas.
Tell Springsteen that. You don't see Springsteen doing the Great American Songbook. Nonsense. He wrecked Rod's image. Wrecked it.
We'll take a
break. But of course, Clive knows best.
We'll take a break. Well, they say never speak ill of the dead. My God, John Cadell has actually proven that adage to be untrue tonight.
I'm sure he was a lovely man, but I just don't rate him as highly as the New York
Times. That's a wild thing to say.
So, in the time that we have left to us, Dee, tell us about Olivia Rodrigo launching an all-female Daisy Chain Fields Festival.
Yeah, so this is kind of cool. It is going to feature Chapel Roan, Bikini Kill, Doechii, Garbage and more. It's going to take place in Great Park in Irvine, California on August 29th. And it's bringing together a lineup of women and female fronted artists across two stages. And then she'll obviously perform at the festival herself. And then there's proceeds from the festival going to non-profit organizations dedicated to supporting and advocating for women and girls.
Let's hear a little bit about Olivia Rodrigo, Maggots for Brains.
It's a
Dee, do you remember the Lilith Fair?
Lilith Fair? No.
It was an all-female festival that toured the country, that toured the US in the, I think it was the late 90s, certainly the mid to late 90s. I think it was the likes of Jewel and Fiona Apple and I think Beth Orton and Sarah McLachlan, I believe. And it was all spearheaded by one particular female artist whose name escapes me right now. But yeah, this reminded me of that.
And presumably named for Lilith Adams, the first wife of Adam in the Bible.
I'm going to say yes.
Before Eve.
Possibly, yeah.
There you go, Nick.
Yeah. But anyway, the Lilith Fair, yeah.
I'm going to put out to listeners as to who they might think this would be, which pop star of the late 20th century into the 21st century is no longer having a biopic made about her, which she was going to be involved with. She says, we've had a falling out, me and Universal, regarding budget because I've had an extraordinary life. I've had a huge life, so I needed a big budget. Who could that possibly be? Of course, it's Madonna.
Do you know if anyone else said it, you'd be like, ah, God, jog on.
Yeah,
but because
right.
It's Madonna, you're like, do you know what? You're not wrong. You do need a big budget.
Yeah. I mean, there's no point in cutting corners when you're doing Madonna's biopic. Yeah.
But hold on. I said, did you read the script? My whole life has been survival. I'm not going there for a holiday.
Well, you surprised that Madonna is a bit of an egomaniac with everything that she's achieved, Matt. Of course she is. Of course.
But survival?
Well, yeah, she's had to like brickbats here, there, and everywhere. Like certainly in the 80s when she was, you know, doing all these daring things that men thought she shouldn't be doing. I mean, she broke
the patriarchy.
Still doing things that men think she shouldn't be doing.
Yeah, she is. Like, you know, and women, some women think she shouldn't be doing.
Well, indeed.
But I see Julia Garner was cast in the lead role.
Perfect casting.
Perfect hair for Madonna in the late 80s, early 90s.
Great casting. Yeah, she has that look on her face that sort of says F you.
Yeah, well, she was brilliant in Ozark. She's top class actress.
Great actress.
Diablo Cody was meant to be doing the script as well, which would have been super.
That would have been great, yeah.
Mm.
But yeah, it looks like it's certainly on the back burner now. But if we know Madonna, she'll find a way to get it done.
It won't be with Universal by the sounds of it anyway.
And it won't be Guy Ritchie directing it either.
No.
Okay, well, we'll see. Maybe, hopefully, we'll still be around. It'll be better than the Michael Jackson movie anyway, wouldn't it?
I liked it.
Less controversial.
Movie.
Did you?
Yeah, I thought it was great.
Mm.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Which songs have been...
So did about 100 million other people, because it's the highest grossing biopic now. It has surpassed, I think, this week, that piece of muck, Bohemian Rhapsody. Highest ever biopic. Highest ever take for a biopic.
I didn't enjoy Bohemian Rhapsody all that much, but I have a lot more time for it than the Michael Jackson one, I have to say, John.
Okay.
Okay. We want to talk about songs that have been chosen for team goals at the World Cup. What is this concept, John, of team goals?
Yeah, I'm not really bothered about this at all. It's like, here's the song that we're going to play when our team scores a goal. It's literally as simple as that. And all of the countries have picked one. And not only
it's
do they
very
have,
American.
Yeah, not only do they have a song that they play every time they score a goal, but then the song they play as well at the end of the match, which is a different song. I mean,
American.
Do they pick these songs during the hydration breaks? I don't know.
Is it because Americans don't know how to chant, don't know how to come up with a football chant themselves on the fly in the way that they...
No, like the teams have picked these songs themselves, but it's a very unique World Cup experience, certainly. I've never heard anything like this. It's the fans that sing the songs that do the chants, isn't it?
Well, I'll be watching England against Ghana tonight, so I wonder, are we going to get to hear, how many times will we get to hear Planet Funk and Chase the Sun? You know, I could just about take it at full time. And, you know, we've had the same at games in Lansdowne Road if Ireland have won. But the idea of playing music to signify a goal, the last thing you're thinking about when you're enjoying a goal is, what tune is that?
I'm not.
That's the last thing
I'm actually going, what tune is that?
Yeah. And I see, what are the other... Well, actually, I mean... Would this be, I mean, if you got a sloppy own goal, if Australia were to benefit from that, would you then have Thunderstruck by AC/DC? Mm-hmm.
Look, you know, I hope that team scores 20 goals so I can hear that every time.
But they're not going to.
Well, you know, we can but dream.
Yeah, okay, right. Okay, well, I suppose, actually, could you just tell me about Ziza calling out AI music after finding her songs were used to train AID?
Yeah, so it comes after The Atlantic launched a new AI detection tool. So it allows artists to see if their music appears in the data sets that's used to train those AI generators. And according to researcher Alec Reisner, there's like it draws on all four different sets available to AI developers. And basically, Ziza found that AI has trained off 238 of her songs, some of them not even released.
So can she sue now, I wonder? Can she sue for the misuse of her creative copyrights?
Technically, you could, but trying to take on the financial might of all of those. Like, yeah. I know that a number of my books have also been used in training AI models.
Really?
There's been so many books written by Irish authors that have been taken without our permission.
Oh, really?
You're smirking at me.
Yeah, I thought
Why?
It was like Spock goes to the zoo or something. Maybe.
No, I didn't write that one. On that note, we will finish The Last Word this evening. My thanks to John Cadell and Dee Reddy. And I'll go off thinking, where did he ever think I wrote Spock Goes to the Zoo?
The Last Word on Today FM.